Your business, your life. Weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on San Diego's ESPN 1700.
This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and welcome to the Ray Program. Glad to have you on board for this hour of Money Power, 844-RAY-SHOW. If you want to check in here, 844-729-7469. Emails at raylucia.com, RAY-LUCIA.com. Remember, if you email me during the course of this show, I will indeed get to it first. I put you to the top of the list because it tells me that you're listening right here, right now, and right on your radio and television nationwide and coast to coast. Okay, coming up today, another great program. Steve Allendorf will be joining us. We're going to talk about student loan refinancing, underwriting updates from Fannie and Freddie, Fannie Mae in particular, credit scores, all that stuff on the docket. Really, really important. We're also discussing real estate today on this program, which you need to know if you're going to buy an investment property as an alternative strategy, following the wealthy investors. That's what they're doing. They're leaving hedge funds and putting their money into real estate. Should you be doing what the rich dudes and dudettes are doing? We'll talk about that. But I start today with these hurricanes and whether or not it will, in fact, slow down the U.S. economy and put a halt to this wicked good bull market that we've been in for the last 9 years. Sit back, folks. Relax. We're going to tell you all about that. Harvey and Irma. Didn't I see on the news there was this like 103-year-old dude named Harvey and he was married to a 90-something-year-old named Irma? Harvey and Irma, they had a wicked, stormy relationship for the past like 50, 60, 70 years. Anyway, it is expected, by the way, that these hurricanes will, in fact, slow the U.S. economy. How could it not? How could it not? Businesses are shut down. People are shut out. So it's going to have an impact. And let's face it, it's not just a couple of the largest states, but the surrounding states. Look at what this Irma's done. I mean, it's already in South Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, all over the place. So some big metropolitan areas, Jacksonville's underwater. It's got to have an economic impact. So what do you do about it? Here's what I say. Nothing. You do nothing about it. In fact, Christopher Rugeber wrote about this just yesterday. With businesses disrupted, he says, fuel and chemical refineries out of commission and consumers struggling to restore their lives, Hurricanes Harvey and Irma will likely pack a tough double whammy for the U.S. economy. Really? And Ray wants me to do nothing? That's correct. I want you to do nothing about it. Because anything you do could be construed as a wrong move right now. Nearly one-fifth of the nation's oil refining capacity has been shut down because of Harvey. And fuel production has dropped sharply as a result, according to Bank of America. Consumers will also spend less in the immediate aftermath of the storms. Even those ready to make purchases will face closed storefronts and dark restaurants. Irma will cause tourists to delay and, in many cases, never take trips to Florida to go see Disney World or whatever. Chemical refineries have been closed, reducing the production of plastic. So it sounds pretty dismal, doesn't it? It gets worse. Damage estimates from the two storms are still early, particularly from Irma. Hurricane Harvey will likely cost up to $108 billion. $108 billion. Mark Zandi says it's $64 to $92 billion for Irma. Although I think the early reports are that Irma the devastation caused by Irma not nearly as bad as they expected. Wow. If you talk about Barbuda being, what is it, 95% of the homes gone, simply gone. And they were expecting worse than that. Whew. While the economic toll pales beside the human cost, analysts estimate that the nation's annualized growth rate will be 0.5 to 1 full percentage point slower in the July to September quarter than it would otherwise have been. So what? It's July to September. If you are managing your money on a July to September basis, you are not an investor. You are indeed a speculator. And we don't like speculation on this program because speculation, prognostication, or any kind of other Asian other than a vacation, you shouldn't be doing as an investor. But, and here's the big but in all of this, repair work, reconstruction, and purchases of replacement cars and other goods should provide an offsetting boost later this year and in early 2018. If you are an honest construction worker and you want work, you talk about high-paying jobs and all the unemployment and all that stuff and underemployment, you want some work? Head south. There's going to be a ton of it, a ton of reconstruction that's going to be going on. Automobiles, the estimation that I saw yesterday, 1 million cars need to be replaced in the greater Houston area. 1 million cars. We don't know about Florida yet, but let's say it's half that. It's a lot of automobiles. Now be careful on the gouging thing here, because I think whether it's, you know, whether you're selling water or cars, if you're going to stick it to people, I think that Pam Bondi is pretty ticked off at some of the looting and stuff that's going on in Florida. She says she's coming after you, as well she should. Construction activity will rocket in the affected areas, so predicted Ian Shepherdson, chief economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics. Household spending on building materials, furniture, appliances, and vehicles will be all much higher than otherwise would have been the case. Now, I know as an investment standpoint, you're going to hear these pundits come on the radio and television and say, well, it's time to buy Lowe's and Home Depot and all that. But believe me, it's already priced in to the company's stock performance. You think they're the only ones that thought about that? Come on. Home builders, you think they're the only ones thinking about that? It's already priced in. If you hire a good money manager, then that money manager will make certain value judgments on which stocks might benefit the most. And hopefully you selected a good money manager. Or if you are an index investor, you put your money into a broad market index and you rise with the tide. And believe me, that's probably a bad pun at this point, but you know what I'm saying. Your money's going to do whatever the market does. And so far, the market has been on a tear since March the 9th of 2009. The rebuilding, though, can take time. After Hurricane Katrina bashed New Orleans back in 2005, it took 7 months for home building permits in the city to return to their pre-hurricane levels, according to Goldman Sachs. Okay, so what? I mean, again, it's bad for the people. Don't get me wrong. So what to them? It's a big deal. Whether it's 7 months just to get the permit, then you can start construction, and then 7-8 months, a year later, you're talking about 2 years, you're disrupted. That's a big deal. So I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying that from an investor perspective, from someone that buys and holds, as we discussed yesterday, you will be better off in the long run because of the new construction. because of the new automobile purchases, accelerating a purchase that probably might not have happened for a year or two or five or 10 years. And the markets are likely to reflect that going higher from here, not necessarily lower from here. Again, no one can predict the future, but Goldman estimates that Harvey and Irma will slice this July-September growth by about 0.8 of a percentage point. It's still 2% growth. And then you got Trump and taxes just ahead, which should give us that point back. And then all of the reconstruction over time should give us that back and then some. So thou shalt not worry. It's my 11th commandment. Steve Allendorf's next. Stick around. Don't go away. It's the Ray Lucia Show. The answer is blowing
in the wind. Listen anywhere, anytime to San Diego's ESPN 1700. We're streaming live at ESPN1700.com or download the free ESPN 1700 app from Google Play or iTunes. Rock you like a
Now, that's cute, fellas. Very, very cute. Thank you very much. Welcome back, folks. It is the Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information. As you know, we talk a lot, especially with our pal Steve Allendorf, about real estate. And if you look at some of the headlines, we're finding that wealthy investors are dumping hedge funds and moving more and more into direct-owned real estate. And there's a reason for that. In fact, there are about five reasons for that. The first reason is real estate investments provide cash flow. Stock market investments, by and large, do not, at least not in general. There are certain high dividend stocks that might provide some cash flow. But real estate provides cash flow, and that cash flow is usually indexed somehow to inflation. Because last time I checked, rents go up. Whether it's annually or every other year or every 5 years, over time, rents and rental fees go up. Second reason, of course, is with real estate, you actually can buy low and sell high. It's a little more difficult to do that in the stock market because it's hard to get people to invest in something that doesn't pay them an income stream when the market is collapsing. In fact, it's just the opposite. When the market starts going down, if you look at the trim tabs, inflows and outflows, you see way more outflows than inflows, just the opposite of what you might find. In real estate, it's a little different story. You actually can buy when the market is down. Also, when the market's down, you're usually aided by lower interest rates because that's a sign of a recessionary trend. And the Fed doesn't mess with interest rates. They want to get the economy going again. So when interest rates are high and moving up, that tells you the economy's going and you're buying high, typically in real estate. So it's interesting. Keep that in mind. The third, actively managed real estate provides better returns and lower risk than stock market investing. This goes back to the Dalbar study where, yeah, you might be able to buy low and sell high and get in and get out, but the Dalbar study tells us that most investors do the wrong things at the wrong times for the wrong reasons. With real estate, you actually don't need to be a market timer. The fourth reason, real estate provides unique tax advantages. We've talked about depreciation, 27.5-year, 39-year depreciation schedule, offsets your income, so your income tax-free. It's better than a muni bond, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, we've discussed leverage as it relates to an investment. Investment in the stock market where you use leverage, you got margin calls and all this other stuff. Leverage is very, very risky. With real estate, you put 20, 30% down, you control the 100% value of the business, of the building, I should say. And leverage is where you make your money, locking in those low interest rates and leverage. Okay, speaking of leverage, the King is here. Hello, King. How you doing?
How are you?
Steve Allendorf, what's up?
Just same old, same old. Just keep on chugging along.
Well, you you were talking to me earlier about what's going on with Fannie Mae and some of the changes out there. Reverse mortgages, we had an interesting conversation about that last week. So give us all the update now.
All right. So let's first start update on the reverse mortgages. All right. So there are major changes that are going to be happening October 2nd. Those major changes basically are the initial upfront premium to through FHA, which does the majority of them, is going up significantly. The actual combined interest rate's going down, but the biggest kick is that there's going to be less equity available on a reverse mortgage after October 2nd. That doesn't mean that it's still not going to work for you. However, if you've been thinking about it, you can get yourself set up on the current guidelines where you'll be able to potentially access or have access down the line to about 20% more equity of your home. And basically all you need to do is make a phone call. We need to get your name, property address, date of birth, find out if we've got a lien and what we've got to pay off. Then we'll do a quick overview as far as some of the things that we can do, and then give you the overview on the counseling. As long as you get the counseling done, and it needs to happen almost immediately, because from the time that we provide you the initial overview, you get the info on the counseling, you make a phone call, it's about 7 or 8 days before you can actually do the counseling.
So that doesn't mean reverse mortgages are dead, just means you'll get a little bit less out of them.
Correct.
They're going to be more protected. It's really the government protecting themselves. But since real estate prices have gone up so dramatically, it's really not the end of the world.
No, it's not the end of the world at all. It's just there's an open window right now that if you've been thinking about it, it's at least worth going through the counseling, which I think is...
You can game the system right now,
correct,
is what you're saying. You
correct
can get a deal that you're never going to see again.
Correct. So you pay $150 to do the counseling. You get yourself set up to potentially work off the current guidelines, and we've got up to, I think, at least 6 months to go through your scenario to see if it really makes sense. So it's $100 or $150, I think, well invested.
There you go. So we got reverse mortgages. What else is going on?
All right. So one of the neat things with both Fannie and Freddie on purchases now is with future income. So in the past, let's say that you wanted to change jobs, or you know you're securing a job, but that either that new job and that you're getting is not going to happen until after you close on a purchase that you want to do. In the past, we had to make sure that you were on the job, we got at least one pay stub in order for us to close the loan. New guidelines with Fannie and Freddie, a little bit different. With Freddie, you can have a new job set up in the waiting, and on the actual note date, meaning when we close it on the note date, you've got 60 days before you can start on the new job, meaning that it go up to 60 days. With Fannie Mae, we have up to 90 days. Now, it's got to be an employment that's non-contingent. It's got to specify a start date. It has to contain the terms of the employment and the salary, meaning it's not for 6 months and then you get reviewed. And then there has to be, you have to have enough cash reserves at closing to cover the couple of months, if that's the waiting period of time before you start your new job. So you can actually get a loan with a job that you're going to start after you close.
So you get a new job and you say, okay, honey, we can now afford that new house. We can go out and buy it because I'm making 25% more money. We can afford the house that we've been thinking about. So we'll go out and buy this new house, and you'll be able to get financing because you've got your contract with the new employer that says you're going to be making $80,000 instead of $60,000.
Correct. So if you want to close before you're actually on job,
fantastic,
we can do that.
That's fantastic.
So that's a great new
product. All right. I know there's stuff going on with student loans and credit scores and all that. So I want to tackle that when we come back and then pick your brain on several other things.
You
How's your brain doing today?
My brain's ready.
Okay. 844-RAY-SHOW. If you have a question for Mr. Steve Allendorf, he is our loan financial planner here on the program. LoanFinancialPlanner.com. LoanFinancialPlanner.com. My pal Steve and I will return with some very, very important information you're not going to want to miss. So stick around right here on the Ray Lucia Show. Don't go away.
Your business, your life. ESPN 1700.
And the authorities came to blame for something that he never done.
Hey, welcome back. Who's that, Bob Dylan? Yeah, I thought so. Yes, it was.
Yes.
Steve Alvedore in the house here at loanfinancialplanner.com. Steve, student loans. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, and there's another neat new setup that we're able to do. I believe this is through Fannie Mae. Is, you know, let's assume whether you as an individual have accumulated student loans or as a parent maybe have cosigned for your kids. I mean, I've seen a lot of transactions where borrowers have $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 or more in student loans.
Oh, yeah, well, the average is like $30,000, $35,000.
And I've seen and done transactions for parents that have cosigned on student loans where we've got $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. And in order to pay them off, because the student loans are generally, you know, I see interest rates between about 6 and 8%. In the past, if somebody came in and said, all right, I want to get rid of these student loans. I have enough equity in my property. Can I do it? Yeah, we could. We could do it as what's called a cash-out refinance. Now, on a cash-out refinance, there are not only more restrictions as far as loan-to-value, but Fannie and Freddie charge a higher premium to do a cash-out transaction versus a rate-and-term transaction. And based on your credit score, that can mean a difference between an eighth of a point in rate up to a half a point in rate. Brand new program with Fannie Mae. If you have equity in your property, you're looking to refinance, you've got a number of student loans. As long as we get the detail of the payoff of those student loans and pay them directly, we can go ahead and do your loan, what's called rate and term, and get you the absolute best rate. So even though we're pulling cash out, that cash is going to pay off the student loans, get rid of those loans that you're paying 6, 7, 8%, getting you then on a mortgage interest rate in the high threes or the low fours with the potential of you being able to write off some of the interest. A lot of it's based on the base amount, how much you've pulled out over the years, and what your accountant will allow you to write off.
Well, it's what the government will allow you to write off. If you have an accountant that will allow you over and above what the government says, that's between you and God and the accountant.
Right, and hopefully the accountant has taken all of the information in
but
they know.
Not everyone can deduct student loan interest, and of course there's a difference between the plus loans and, you know, like a parent loan. And you're right, they're coming in 6, 8% sometimes.
Right, so now you put it in the mortgage, as long as you're not $100,000 above what your
acquisition cost
plus any improvements, then you have the potential of being able to write off the interest as well and saving a crap load of money.
A boatload of money.
Boatload of money.
We'll just
okay.
say boatload of money.
Okay.
Okay, student loans. Steve Alvedore, loanfinancialplanner.com. He's got all these tricks up his sleeve. He's a diversified loan advisor. That's why we call him our loan financial planner. 888-563-1070 is his telephone number. He knows all this stuff. 888-563-1070. Okay, I'll give you time for one more trick up your sleeve.
Okay. Let's talk about credit.
Okay.
And the advent now where you have all of these firms, Discover, and areas where now as an individual, it gives you the option to take a look at your credit report. But here's where the issue is that there are different scoring models that are out there. I couldn't tell you how many. I have a number of clients that'll go into Discover or the Credit Karma or whatever and come up and tell me when I say, okay, here's how loan pricing works. You have an idea what your credit scores are. Oh, yeah, by the way, I just pulled my credit from this particular source. And it was X amount. And then I attempt to tell them that, okay.
You did this with me once, and it really ticked me off. As I said, my credit score, I think it was for my daughter. My daughter's credit score is
Remember that?
And then you said, oh, no, it's not. And I said, well, wait a minute. Credit Karma says. And you said BS on that.
So just to give you an idea, I had a borrower that recently called in and said, oh, here are the scores that I got through Discover. And I said, you know what? It's not the same model that we use in the mortgage business. Let me run our mortgage credit report and let's go ahead and do a comparison. So with this borrower, their Equifax Discover model score was 769. My lender score was 686.
Oh, come on.
Experian.
Wait a minute. That's like too far apart.
It's not that it's too far apart, Ray.
That's 100 points almost.
Exactly. Different credit model. Now, Experian was the same on both the lender credit reports, and that all lenders pull from the same type of source, and then the Discover model was a 743. On TransUnion, Discover was 724, and the lender model was 673. So in the mortgage business, we're required, in most cases on Fannie Freddie loans, to use the mid-credit score. So mid-credit score on my particular credit reports was 686. The Discover model was 743. On a Fannie Freddie loan, there could be a huge difference in pricing between a 686 mid-credit score and a 743.
Okay, what's the solution?
There is no solution. Realize that when you pull or you get your credit reports from other sources, it's not necessarily the same credit score that's going to be used
in
doing
the
mortgage loan.
But isn't that kind of a scam, then, with all these websites that are coming out?
Not necessarily, because these scores can be used for potential car loans or credit cards. It is frustrating when I talk to a client and they tell me, well, here are my credit scores, and it's like, all right, did you have a lender pull it? Or did you get it from one of the, well, I got it from one of these sources, and it's like, oh, God, I know what's going to happen when I pull the credit report. Now, the advantages of having access to your credit is if is anything being reported incorrectly. Late payments, maybe a judgment pops up, maybe you see something that's, hey, maybe this is not my credit, maybe somebody's used my Social Security number. So those services are good for allowing you to gain access to make sure that everything's clean on your credit, but don't look at those credit scores and think those are the scores that are going to be used if you're looking to do a mortgage loan.
What do you know about the Equifax deal?
With the Equifax deal, it appears that probably almost everybody...
Like 143 million of us.
That everybody has been somewhat compromised. So they do have something where you can go in, put in the last six digits of your social, and then find out if, in fact, your information, so your credit, Social Security number, has potentially been accessed. What's going to happen? I think we're all going to have to keep our eyes on our credit.
Aren't they offering, like, you know, a 1 year?
And free service monitoring.
Free service.
And whether you do it or not, then these particular other models I was talking about are good to stay on top of, to see if anything's happening different on your credit. Do you have a credit card that all of a sudden the balance has gone up and you haven't charged on it? Is there an additional debt you're seeing on there or credit obligation that you don't have?
So I can open my Credit Karma emails. Since you and I talked about that about a year ago, I haven't even looked at my Credit Karma.
Yeah,
I don't care because it sounds bogus to me.
Yeah, the only thing that you can't hang your hat on are the credit scores for a mortgage loan.
For a mortgage.
But if
I want to go buy a Ferrari, I can pull that score.
Well, and it all depends if the car company or the finance company is using that particular credit model. And a lot of times, the car companies only use one, whether it be Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion. So every credit source you go to is going to be a little bit different on how they use your scores, do they use all three, and what credit model they're using. So just be aware of that.
So in terms of managing your credit score, what's the quickest and best way to get the score up from a mortgage perspective, from your perspective, not Credit Karma's or anybody else's?
So, number one, make your payments on time. Number two, if you've got an issue with a creditor, clear it up. Do not dispute it on your credit report. People think that if I have it disputed on my credit report, a lender's going to look at it thinking that maybe it wasn't my responsibility or I don't agree. But any dispute that is on a credit report, if there's more than one, generally, you have to get that dispute cleared up before I can close a mortgage loan.
I know you made me pay $140 twice because I had already paid it once. Remember that? It was a mortgage years ago. And I disputed it, and you said, Ray, pull out your checkbook right now and write them a check.
Yeah, so I don't think you paid it twice. I think it pissed you off because it was $140 that you shouldn't have been charged.
Oh, is that what it was?
But principal versus getting your credit score up, we paid that $140.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what
it was. The other is get your credit debt. If you've got a credit limit of 10 grand, get the credit that you owe on it below 30% and make more than the minimum payments. All of those particular things will help improve your credit.
He's brilliant. He's my man. He's my loan man, my loan financial planner. LoanFinancialPlanner.com for Steve Allador. He'll help you get your credit cleared up. He'll help you get a mortgage. He'll help you with a reverse mortgage. He'll help you with your real estate. He's just the best. 888-563-1070, LoanFinancialPlanner.com. Thank you, Steve.
Always a pleasure.
I'll have to clean up your language a little bit next time, but you were okay.
I'll work on that over the week,
all right? Go to confession this weekend.
Oh.
Your business, your life, ESPN 1700.
Well, nothing comes all that easy, but if you want somebody that can help make your loan processing and so forth a lot easier, it's Steve Allador. I mean, the guy's just fantastic. I'm so glad to have him on the program. I think we're counting 25 years here. LoanFinancialPlanner.com. Forward mortgages, reverse mortgages, real estate, the whole nine yards. Hit it, guys. I got an email in during the break, so I'm going to go right to it. It's from Steve. And Steve asks, how do you get tax-free income and other tax benefits from a real estate investment? I make over $150,000. Okay. So what Steve is alluding to, he's half right and half wrong. What he's alluding to is he's a higher income individual. And remember, when you depreciate a property, remember I said you can depreciate property over 27 and a half years or 39 years? The difference is residential, as in apartments and condos and houses that you rent out to the public, and commercial office buildings. The residential side, the depreciation is 27 and a half years. What does that mean? That means you take the cost of the structure, not the land. You divide it by 27 and a half, and whatever that number is your write-off for depreciation. So if you bought a $375,000 piece of property, residential property, and $100,000 was land, and $275,000 was structure, then you would get a write-off of $10,000. Now, Steve, you get that write-off against your income. So the first $10,000 of income that you got from that property would be offset by the depreciation. The depreciation lowers your basis, and when you sell, you'll have to recapture that depreciation. Now, the reason you don't get other tax benefits or depreciation beyond your income is because you make more than $100,000. For every $2 you make over $100,000, you've got to give back $1 of your passive losses. And the maximum passive loss that you can take as a non-active real estate investor is $25,000. So at $150,000, you phase out of $25,000 of losses, but that doesn't mean you don't get them. They're suspended on your return, and ultimately you'll get those losses to offset recapture rates and other capital gains costs later on. So that's how you get tax-free income. It's still a whale of a deal. Real estate as an income producer, in my opinion, much better than tax-free municipal bonds. Riskier? Probably so. But much, much better. You'll probably get a higher yield. Hard to find a tax-free muni that pays 5 or 6%. real estate, you can probably do that. In terms of inflation, if you have inflation, muni bond gets killed if you have to sell it, especially if it's a fund, because interest rates go up. But if you have inflation on your real estate, you charge a higher rent. So, and then, of course, the asset price goes up, too. So it's if you're going to be a muni bond owner or any bond owner, I'm not saying get rid of all your bonds. I'm just saying, why don't we look at an alternative strategy to produce income called real estate? Now, you need to know what you're doing. And if you don't, you got to team up with some real estate professionals that really do know what they're doing, have a track record. You got to make sure you have adequate liquidity and all the other risks. Talk to your advisor about it. But to me, it's the best alternative investment strategy that you can put your money in, Steve. Okay, Michael, a long email. Both myself and my wife contribute the max to 401k plans. Our combined income is such that we do not qualify for a deductible IRA. We have been considering doing a backdoor Roth conversion. Good idea? And then he goes on. We can contribute any amount, ? We want it into a regular IRA and then request it to be converted into a Roth option. Is that both of our 401ks allow us to also contribute past the annual limits and put it into an after-tax bucket in the 401k and then eventually convert to a Roth, which is the better strategy. It depends. It depends. The backdoor Roth IRA is the simplest one, okay? Now, the problem with the backdoor Roth IRA is if you have any other IRAs, you're going to have to take that into account when you do the conversion. In other words, what the backdoor means is you fund a non-deductible IRA, and then sometime later on, you convert that non-deductible IRA to a Roth. The problem with that is it's still a traditional IRA. So that non-deductible traditional IRA has to also be included with your other traditional IRAs. And if you have $90,000 or $94,000 or whatever the number is in traditional IRAs, say $90,000 and $10,000 accumulated in non-deductible contributions, and you try to do the $10,000 conversion, well, you're going to pay tax on $9,000, 90% of it, because 90% of your traditional IRAs is pre-tax money. So you'd have to get rid of all of the pre-tax money by rolling that money into the 401k before you can do the back door. That's the negative there. As far as the top hat plan, where you're putting extra money, your company is allowing you to fund all the way up to the maximum, $20,000-$30,000 extra into your retirement account, that's pretty wicked good too. You don't have access to the money like you would in a traditional Roth IRA, because you've got the FIFO tax treatment, you can take money out. But if you want to do a mega Roth IRA, I'd probably encourage you to do that, because who knows? The government may take that one away. They like the idea of the other one, but they may take the top hat plan away. So I would do that. But just be cognizant of the fact you're going to have all this money that's post-tax in your retirement account that can be rolled over into a Roth when you retire. And, you know, since you can put like $56,000 away in total, you may have the ability to fund $25,000-$30,000 of your post-tax money each year into your 401k. It goes into a post-tax bucket. You might have $200,000 sitting in a post-tax bucket that can be directly rolled over to a Roth when you retire. That sounds really, really good to me. Okay, long email, long answer. There you have it. If you want to email me, go to raylucia.com. Click on the Ask Ray button. Now go out and make it a fabulous day. And thank you for tuning in to the Ray Lucia program. Please tell your friends and neighbors all about it. God bless you, and bye-bye.
You're listening to The Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of the station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions online at raylucia.com.